there anybody here that's very, very new? Very, very new? Okay. Because the reason for asking is so I know where to begin speaking from. Yesterday at the Bhakti Diksha gathering, I made mention of the pastime of, among other things, the pastime of Durvas Muni and Ambarish Maharaj and that Leela from the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam. So somebody asked me, can you speak more about that? So, because there's a particular passage where Lord Vishnu describes to Durvas Muni why he has the quality of Bhakta Vatsala. So Bhakta Vatsala, according to Rupa Goswami, this is the most outstanding quality of the Supreme Lord, and that is his affection upon the Lord's devotee. And it seems like a contradiction, because there are passages in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna indicates that he doesn't have partiality, and one would expect that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no partiality. Samoham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho sti na priyaha. Krishna's neutral. He doesn't, there are not those that he has dvesha or disregard towards. He doesn't like, I don't like that person. And I like that person. That's, I have my favorites. We have our favorites, but the Supreme Lord is neutral. Prabhupada gives this example. Supposing there's a father, or father and mother, have many children, and they have affection for all their children. That's very natural. Supposing they're very good parents. Very natural parental affection towards children. So that's the samoham sarva bhuteshu part. Uh-oh. I better turn mine off too. It doesn't ring like that. But the Prabhupada goes on, supposing that amongst the many children there's one child that's particularly dependent upon their parents, particularly affectionate to their parents, particularly shows that kind of regard for their parents, supposing. So how do the parents feel? Naturally, there's special affection for that child, although they have affection for all their children. It's natural. That's the Prabhupada's explanation. So, similarly, Krishna doesn't have favorites, although it may appear that he has favorites. When Kamsa approaches Krishna, I want to kill you. You're my enemy. So, or Ravana. So, Krishna's disposition is, oh, you wish me to be your enemy? Very well, I'll be your enemy. And he liberates them. Although the exchange looks like, ooh, he's harsh, and they spoke harsh words, and he killed them. But it's not like that. That's what the Leela looks like. So Krishna's killing demons, but then they attain liberation. Just like in the first chapter of the seventh canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, it sets the tone for the whole canto, where just following in the Raja Suya Yagya, Shishupal gets carried away with his offensiveness towards Krishna. And in his offensiveness towards Krishna, because at the Raja Suya Yagya, it's the superlative personality, the to be honored in the greatest degree personality is identified and spoken of. And Krishna is in the assembly, so he's spoken of in that way. And the one who speaks of him is Grandfather Bhishma. And Grandfather Bhishma knows that Krishna is the personality of Godhead. And Grandfather Bhishma honors him and honors him and honors him and honors him, and Shishupal is becoming so disturbed. Because Shishupal, there's a description in, I think it's Garga Samhita, that Shishupal, of course Shishupal is one of the Shishupal and Dantavakra, one of the third appearances of Jayan Vijay. And Shishupal had an inimical attitude toward Krishna from the time, the time that he was born. It's described that when Shishupal was born, because he was a relative of Krishna, they were cousins or something like that, and when Shishupal was just a child, some newly born child, there was conversation in the assembly and the name of Krishna was spoken of. And when Shishupal heard Krishna's name spoken, he started to scream. You know, children can cry. And children can cry really loud. And sometimes, maybe as householders you don't notice it, but as a sannyasi, I notice it. Sometimes they scream. And Shishupal started screaming. But he didn't stop screaming. He screamed all day long and all night long and the next day and the next day. And he screamed for practically 2 weeks just from hearing Krishna's name. His enmity towards Krishna was extreme. And then as he grew up, that it didn't subside, it just matured. His enmity was extreme. So when Grandfather Bhishma was glorifying Krishna in the way that Grandfather Bhishma uniquely can glorify Krishna, Shishupal was ready to burst. And then Shishupal finally couldn't take it, and he stood up in the assembly, interrupted Grandfather Bhishma, and started blaspheming Krishna. Bhima grabbed his club. Bhima was ready to smash him. He couldn't take it. And Krishna just held his hand, indicating, let him go. Because there was some commitment that Krishna had made that he would not harm Shishupal unless he blasphemed him 100 times, and he reached the 100th time and the speaking part of Shishupal's body was separated from the rest with the Sudarshan chakra. And when that happened, the soul of Shishupal left his body, hovered in the air, and entered into Krishna's body. Everyone was astonished. I guess they cleaned up the bloody mess and went on with the Rajasuya Yajna. And at the end, there was a discussion between Yudhisthira and Narada Muni, because Narada Muni served like the instructing spiritual master of the Pandavas. So there are many passages in Mahabharata, and here this is a case of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Yudhisthira presented questions to Narada, and his question was, how did this happen? Because we know that liberation, sought after by great yogis and ascetics and sadhus and saintly people, may practice for a long, long time and many lifetimes and still not achieve liberation. And this bad person, Shishupal was known as a bad person. He achieved liberation. How is this possible? Please explain. Can't understand it. And Yudhisthira received this very nice reply. Just see the power of the holy name. The holy name is such that even if called in derision, there's a particular term in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, in the first chapter, there's different types of Nam Abhas. You know, like the kind of chanting that we do is called Nam Abhas. There's Shuddha Nam, pure chanting. And then there's Nam Aparad, offensive chanting. And we're somewhere in between that bottom and top. And that's called Abhas, or shadow, or reflection of the holy name. Prabhupada calls it the clearing stage, where it's not, you know, here, but it's not there either. So for us, that clearing stage is, we should be trying, striving, endeavoring to become free from offenses, like inattentiveness and offending the Vaishnavas and all those very important offenses to be avoided when chanting the holy name. And provided we're endeavoring, then it's considered clearing. But there are lower levels of that abhas also, like what Shishupal did, with scorn and derision, or parihasya, laughing, just like sometimes we go in Harinam and people see us chanting in Harinam and they come in front of the chanting party and they make fun of the chanting party, you see? That they laugh. Krishna, Hare Krishna. Ah. Like that. That's very good. I'll tell a Prabhupada story. We'll come back to the Bhagavatam. Our temple in Brooklyn, before the present location in Brooklyn, used to be on Henry Street. It was in a heavy Italian neighborhood. Not just like a normal, but a heavy Italian neighborhood. And the people in that neighborhood had a particular way of letting us know when we did something that they didn't like. Like, for example, we would have Mangalarti at 4:30. And they didn't like that. So the way that they let us know is they threw stones through a window and sometimes a Molotov cocktail through the window to like let us know, don't have musical instruments at 4:30 in the morning. They didn't send somebody knock on the door and say, it's a little loud, can you do it a little differently? That's just how they told us. So we started having Mangalarti without musical instruments, and everything was fine. And then another is, we were in a neighborhood where there wasn't a lot of ample parking, So if we left our cars at night on the street, there was an open spot, we parked our car. In the morning, the car was burned. And that was their way of letting us know, don't park your car in the street, please. So we rented a place and parked our cars over there. You know, there was, so we got along very nicely as long as we did certain things and like that. So right across the street, we were on a corner, and the opposite corner was a school, a schoolyard. So the school had a schoolyard, you know, cement, no grass, just in a big wrought iron fence. And we would go out on Harinam in the morning. You know, it was okay after 9 o'clock because everybody was up and off at work. So we would, after breakfast, morning program, breakfast, go on Harinam to the F train. There's a Bergen Street subway over there. And we'd come back after lunch for our afternoon program and our lunch program. And the timing that we would come back, there were kids on the street. Excuse me, there were kids in the playground. Because they knew when we were coming, because we were pretty regulated for our lunch. So we came back the same time. They would stand and make fun of the chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Every day. So I remember one morning, after the morning class, Prabhupada was visiting, and he, after speaking, Trivikram Swami, you know, don't know him, but he stays in Orlando these days, in charge of a nice center there. And he stood up and asked Prabhupada, is it okay when the children in the neighborhood make fun of the holy name? Isn't that offensive, Prabhupada? And he said, they say Hare Krishna and then they laugh at us and laugh at the holy name. And Prabhupada immediately said, no, that's very good. That's very good. And Trivikram Maharaj didn't exactly, he just accepted it because Prabhupada said it, but it didn't understand it. Some 20-something years later, that was whatever that was, 1971. So 20 years later, so 1991, I was traveling through the Detroit airport. It was Northwest Airlines, and so it's a transit from one flight to another flight headed to New York. And so I was just waiting at the gate for the next departure, and a whole string of airport employees came down at once together, and they were talking kind of loudly and laughing, and one of them stopped right in front of me and said, oh my God, looking right at me, and I didn't know what was up. So he said, you go ahead, I'm going to stop here for a moment. So he stopped and he said, are you Hare Krishna? I said, yeah. He said, oh no. I said, what do you mean, oh no? What happened? He said, well, I used to live in Brooklyn. I said, so did I. And he said, oh no. He said, you people were so nice, you always treated everybody so well, and you fed people, and you took care of people, and we were so bad, we threw stones through your windows, and we burned your cars. And he said, oh, you lived in the same neighborhood. He said, yeah, we went to school right across the street, and every time you come back with your cymbals and drums and singing, and we'd laugh at you and make fun of you. We were so bad. I said, okay. He said, but that melody, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, it never left my mind. said so many years later. It just would suddenly appear in my mind. In fact, just today, when we got out of work, I started singing. And all of my friends, they started laughing at me, just like you laughed at you. And then I saw you standing here, and I feel so bad. At least I can apologize for all those bad things that we did. Please forgive me. I said, and I said, whoa, you're so sincerely expressing your apology. How can one say otherwise? Sure. He said, but you know, you really do good things, and you know, keep up the good work. I thought, you know, this is Krishna speaking. Keep up the good work. Chant the holy name, even if people laugh and say things and like that. Because just seeing that impression was made and carried in that young man through. You know, that's not why we went out on Harinam, was so that young boy who was taunting us in the schoolyard would grow up and become a chanter of Krishna's holy name, even without even trying. The holy name is very powerful. The holy name is very powerful. So, Shishupal was also chanting Krishna's holy name. This is what Yudhisthira was saying. And it's so powerful that he achieved liberation. Then he said, what to speak of if one tries to chant nicely or attentively or with devotion? Now, we struggle. There are probably some devotees that don't struggle, but they're pretty hard to find. We were all struggling with something. Just, you know, being blunt about it. And that's okay. Because, I mean, it's not fun to struggle, but it's just part of being in a toxic atmosphere, or in the language of the Bhagavatam, trying to advance spiritually in Kali Yuga in an atmosphere that is surcharged with opposition. It's very difficult. The stream is moving very quickly one direction. We're trying to go the other direction. Even if you're a good swimmer, go into the Ganga. I've done it. And the swimming upstream and the Ganga's moving, you can swim very swiftly and you're still moving downstream because the Ganga is moving very fast. So even you may be a good devotee, sincere, striving to practice devotional service. The atmosphere is difficult. It's Kali Yuga. So what's important in those devotional efforts is our relationship with Krishna. Because Krishna recognizes the efforts that we make. And what does Krishna feel when he sees those efforts that we make? Now, the reference that I made yesterday was to Vibhishan, who, when he came, he just couldn't take Ravana's wickedness anymore. So he left him. And he went to join Ram. And when he came, he was with four people, four other attendants or associates. And when he arrived, there was suspicion. This is Ravana's brother. And Ravana's bad. So we can't trust him. And then after hearing them out, all of their negative things about him, Ram spoke, I accept him. And he may have this motivation, that motivation, that's all right. One who surrenders unto me, I accept them. That's what if then he spoke that. Anyone who even wants takes shelter of me. My protection is guaranteed for that person. And it may be that when one takes shelter of Krishna, it's like desperation or something. To some degree, circumstance created. Like, when there's calamity. Like you know, we all know what that's like when there's calamity. One of the most outstanding examples of that, in my experience, was New York City after 9/11. Look, New Yorkers are not reverent. They're not known to be reverential people. But after that happened, they became very religious. You know, some of you that maybe work in New York City know what that was like. Every street corner, they had little shrines. I'm going in all four directions. They would stand at the corner, not only wait for the walk sign, but they were praying, and they set up shrines, little places of worship, at every corner. The whole mood changed because their safety was gone. That, you know, we're New Yorkers, no one can touch us, was gone. It lasted, you know, for a while. Now it's back to usual. But when calamity comes, then one can be especially tuned into shelter taking. And when Krishna sees and hears from that devotee, that shelter taking, there's a really nice passage in the beginning of the sixth canto where Sukadeva Goswami is narrating the appearance of the Yamadutas because Ajamila called Narayana. It just says the Yamadutas came. But in the commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur takes one word, and I forget the word. Matihi is the word. The Lord considered, so he explains that. He said, the Lord considered. When he heard Ajamila call, Ajamila calling the name of Narayana, Narayana considered, oh, he's calling my name. I must come and give him protection because he's calling my name. And therefore he dispatched the Vishnu Dutas to give protection. Why? In desperation. Not in like special devotion. He wasn't like practicing sadhana bhakti. He was facing death. And in desperation he called his son. Narayana. That's another example of abhas. It's indirect, unintentional. It's a type of abhas chanting. And with that, the Lord appeared for his representatives and protected him. And therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, like with Shishupal, indicates what to speak of if one chants with, attempting to chant with devotion. So we're struggling. Not maybe not like Ajamila, or not like Shishupal. You know, that's extreme. We have less extreme, but we have our struggles. And we call Krishna's name with some feeling. And Krishna hears. And Krishna gives his protection. And it's his nature. It's his bhaktavatsala nature. It's according to Rupa Goswami, it's the most outstanding quality. And it's puzzling in some ways. Because he's neutral, but he's affectionate. Besides his neutrality, even greater is his affection. So as we show affection towards him, he shows affection towards us. It's not contractual, it's just his nature. And the verses from the pastime with Ambarish Maharaj and Durvas Muni, the Lord reveals why. So I'd like to read to you four or five verses from the Bhagavatam that Lord Vishnu is explaining why he feels the way he feels. I consider these to be those, there are sections of the Bhagavatam that describe the Lord's feelings towards his devotee, and they're the most confidential. Just like we have these chapter 9 Bhagavad Gita's, the most confidential knowledge. And this is the most confidential part of the most confidential knowledge. Confidential is to understand the distinction between the soul and the coverings of the soul, our real identity. That's confidential knowledge. And more confidential is the distinction between the individual soul and the supreme soul. Some people understand, at least theoretically, aham brahmasmi, I'm spirit. But then there's parabrahman and brahman. That's more confidential, making that distinction. But the loving relation between the individual soul and the supreme soul, that's chapter 9, Shuddha Bhakti. And the most confidential part of the most confidential chapter is what Krishna feels towards his pure devotee. To know Krishna's heart. So I'm going to read some verses where Krishna is disclosing his heart. Or this is Lord Vishnu disclosing his heart to Maharaj Ambarish. So the scene, I've really taken up most of my time already talking about these other things. The scene is Durvas Muni is being chased by Sudarshan Chakra. So if anybody is so new that you don't know about that, you can ask your friends that you came with and they'll tell you. Ambarish Maharaj is a king, and Durvas Muni is a brahmana, and in the social order, the brahmanas are the head of the social order. They're to be respected by all. However, Ambarish was a Vaishnava. Durvas Muni was not. And as a Vaishnava, and a superlative Vaishnava, Ambarish Maharaj was being honored to such a degree, deserving, he was well deserving of that honor, but he was honored to such a degree that Durvas Muni was envious. He wanted to be honored that like that. So he was envious. He didn't like he was being honored so much. So when he came back from his taking his bath after traveling so he could break the fast on the Dwadasi morning after the 1 year Ekadasi fast, Vrata of Maharaj Ambarish, that Maharaj Ambarish had sipped water to break the fast, he became irate. He lost it. His anger exploded, as Durvas Muni can sometimes do. And with his mystic power, he created a fiery demon and directed the fiery demon at Ambarish Maharaj to kill him. He sipped water. A little disproportionate kind of reaction to the king drinking 3 sips of water to break the Dwadasi fast. So Sudarshan Chakra immediately appeared and chopped off the head of the fiery demon and then started pursuing Durvas Muni, who went to Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and eventually Lord Vishnu. And Durvas Muni, like Ajamila, was calling for protection of his life. It was a life and death situation. Here comes Sudarshan Chakra. Invincible. So he offered, Durvas offered a prayer to Lord Vishnu, prayer for forgiveness for the offense that he had made, and a request. And the request was, please take away your Sudarshan Chakra. It's very hot. My life is about to expire. So now the verses are what Lord Vishnu said. Five of them.
Five or six of them.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahmana, I am completely under the control of my devotees.
What?
Indeed, I am not at all independent.
What?
Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. Now, a little explanation. The Lord most certainly is fully independent. We have tiny independence because we're part and parcel of the supremely independent. So we have qualities in a minute degree like He has in an infinite degree. Qualitatively one, quantitatively different. He has unlimited independence. But here he's saying, I have no independence. Why is that? And the answer is, the fullness of his independence he has subordinated with his independent free will to the will of his devotee. He has submitted himself to his devotee. He has become the devotee of his devotee. I'm not independent. I'm in the heart of my devotee, and I'm very indebted to my devotee. What to speak of a devotee of my devotee. O best of the Brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and supreme opulences. Now, what is the enjoyment of the Supreme Lord? He is by nature Satchit Ananda Vigraha. He is full in eternality, knowledge, and bliss. But his statement here is, what's the bliss of my own bliss and my own opulences without the association of my devotees? There's no bliss. There's no happiness. I don't care for it. So this is what's important, the association of my devotees. Next verse. Since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me, without any desire for material improvement in this life or the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? Now, this doesn't mean that everyone must take the sannyas order and go live in the forest. It means the attachment to the material enjoyment aspect of worldly things. That's our teaching from Rupa Goswami or from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Anasaktasya Vishayan Yataram Upayunjitaha Nirbanda Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagya Uchite. That's the teaching. Anasaktasya Vishayan. Asakti, we know that is one of the stages of bhakti. The stage of attachment is asakti. So this is anasaktasya, without attachment, vishayam. Vishayam means sense enjoyment. Without sense enjoyment, hari sambandha vastuna, those things that are in relation to hari. And vastuna means stuff, like, you know, homes. And, you know, stuff, whatever the list of stuff is that people have. Without attachment to the material enjoyment of those things, but utilizing those things in service to Krishna. That's the standard of real renunciation. That's Lord Chaitanya's teaching and expressed by Rupa Goswami. So we say it in very simple terms. Yukta Vairagya. Yukta utilizing things in Krishna's service? Vairagya, in a spirit of detachment from those things. You use those things in a spirit of detachment from those things. Just like when I come to New Jersey, I stay at Premarnava's home, and he has his mridanga. And he likes his mridanga. He takes great care of his mridanga. You know, we ride back and forth in the car. It gets a special seat in the back seat, so it doesn't, when we're, you know, moving around, it doesn't get crashed and crushed and then, you know, useless. He takes care of the mridanga, as he takes care of his children and his wife and his home. But it's in the mood of devotion, not in the mood of attachment. At least he's practicing like that. And that's how we should utilize things. We should utilize things. It's not required to give things up. It's required to utilize things in the mood of devotion. And because we're utilizing things in the mood of devotion, we take care of them even more than the attached person takes care of their stuff. Even more. Because it's for Krishna. So it's with devotion. We take care of things. We take care of our family members. We take care of stuff in the right spirit of devotion. And that, so that's what Vishnu is saying to Ambarish, to Dravas. Because my devotees have, I'm their only shelter. I'm their only shelter. Without any desire for material improvement in this life or the next, how can I give up my devotee? At any time. It means he doesn't. They're attached to me, I'm attached to them. Two more verses. As a chaste woman brings to her gentle husband, brings her gentle husband under control by service, the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of their heart, bring me under their full control. So it's a science of domestic peace. The wife brings her husband under control by her service mood. Now, it doesn't always happen that way, but that's the science. And that's described very nicely in the beginning of this canto also, Sukanya and Chavanya. But anyway, Chavana Muni. So, he's comparing the devotee to a devoted wife, changed and devoted wife. Naturally, the husband feels special affection in that situation and extends himself more than any other thing can cause a man to do something, is the affection for a very loyal, chaste, and faithful wife. They sacrifice everything, and same for children like that. So, as is something that we know worldly, Vishnu is saying, I'm under the control of my devotees. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, and Sharsti. Although these are automatically achieved by their service, what then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary systems? So this is the key verse, the next one, text 68. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. This is the one that's quoted so often. Sadhava hridayam mayam. The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. That's Krishna's quality of Bhakta Vatsala. So then it's proportionate. Proportionate to one's submission unto Krishna, which Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Yayatam mam prapadyante tang sthitaiva pajamyaham mama varpana vartante. Krishna says, as they prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Krishna reciprocates. However we regard him, he reciprocates. So if we're having a problem, sometimes we have a problem. If we're having a problem, one of the first places you should look, we're advised to look, is what is our relationship with Krishna? It may be that the problem is just a manifestation of the problem we have in our relationship with Krishna. And if we can correct that problem, we've taken care of the other problem. Because if taking care of the other problem doesn't mean like we will never have a problem. It means that Krishna will give his protection, as he did with Maharaj Ambarish. He protected Maharaj Ambarish by his Sudarshan Chakra. And Krishna may also provide his protection to us in ways that we're not exactly expecting it's going to be that way or some other way. But Krishna is very kind. My way of saying this Bhakta Vatsala quality, I like this phrase. Krishna is very kind. In all circumstances. Reality is, Krishna is very kind. I'll just end with this. There's a nice passage of commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur where he's explaining the answer to the common question that we hear. Why is it that a devotee is a good devotee, he or she is a good devotee, and that this difficulty is coming? Maybe it's a health problem, or maybe it's a something-something problem, they lost their job problem, or something problem. They're a good devotee, or I'm a good devotee, why is this problem, why is this happening? You know that question. There's different versions of the same question. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes in a very interesting way. When there's night and it's pitch black and then some lamp comes, then one can see and one appreciates the light that comes from the lamp or the dawning morning sun. After a long night or after a long period of drought, no rain, and then the rains come, such relief comes. You appreciate very much the rain or the light. After some period of being deprived, when mercy comes, then we appreciate that mercy in a very special way that otherwise we must take for granted. The bounty, the good fortune that has come into our lives, each of us, we just take for granted. And when that good fortune seems to have disappeared, what happened? At least in the case of a devotee, it's not exactly they're getting their past karma, because they're under the care of the internal potency. But Krishna may be making a situation so that one can become more intensely dependent upon him. And when it's just like many of the pastimes in Krishna book, some demon comes and, here comes a Rishtasura or something. The cowherd boys enter into the mouth of Agasura or Kaliyadaman or so many pastimes. This danger or the difficulty comes So that there's increased, intensified dependence upon Krishna, and then Krishna rescues him. And the danger is all over. And they go and sit and have lunch. And talk about how wonderful is Krishna. That's Vrindavan. And we're not in Vrindavan, we're in New Jersey. But so there may be some difficulty that comes our way. But Krishna is always there. And proportionate to our attentiveness to him, Krishna will reciprocate. Guaranteed. Even that, you know, kid in the Italian neighborhood, he wasn't thinking, oh, I want to become Krishna conscious. Let me go live, go to school next to a Hare Krishna temple. So I can become Krishna conscious. But he became Krishna conscious. At least, you know, in this life, to a degree that's just amazing. Just amazing. Krishna is very kind. And according to the disposition of our hearts towards Krishna, then more that openness of receiving the kindness of Krishna into our lives will enrich our lives. And there's a sadhana to help us do it. If we just strive a little bit, aside from the, you know, accidental calling of Krishna's name, the Ajamila's calling, or the Shishupal's calling, or the school child's calling, we can call Krishna's name with in practice, with sadhana, combined with this wonderful opportunity to hear the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam and the association of devotees. And such good fortune has come to our lives compared to those that have not had that association. One of the things that a sannyasi learns, whether we're skilled at it or not, is to console people when they have a problem. It happens all the time. Like, you do it, multiply that by 100. Yeah, when you become a sannyasi, it's that it happens. And one of the things that people share regularly is, after describing the tribulation, they're often, the punchline at the end is, I don't know how I would have survived this situation if it hadn't been for my training in Krishna consciousness and the understandings that I have, the association of devotees. And there's lots of people that are suicidal in the world that we live in today. So, tribulation is there, and how do we face it? How do we face difficulties? And one of the first things we learn in devotion, whether it's this side of duality or that side of duality, take shelter of Krishna. Things are going well, don't become complacent, take shelter of Krishna. Things are going difficult, take shelter of Krishna. Things are somewhere in between, take shelter of Krishna. And in the association of other devotees, help one another to take shelter of Krishna by hearing and chanting together and all the things that devotees do. Vajina Kriya, together in the association of other devotees. We're cultivating inwardly, we're cultivating our disposition towards taking shelter of Krishna, as Vibhishan did. And Ram said, no, I must accept him. And that's the Supreme Lord that we're worshipping. He's very kind. And we need that kindness in our life. We need that mercy in our life, whatever our position may be. So you might want to go back, if you have Bhagavatam in your home, and read those verses and the purports, which I didn't read. Maharaj Ambarish, or excuse me, Durvas Muni hearing from Lord Vishnu why he's controlled by his devotees, why he has such affection for his devotees. I think it will inspire you in your Krishna consciousness. It's chapter 4, canto 9. Around the verse 60 to 68. Hare Krishna. Any